Welcome to the Travel Pulse Podcast, your go-to listening for everything travel. Here are your Travel Pulse hosts, Eric Bowman and Dan Callahan.
Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Dan Callahan, co-host of the Travel Pulse Podcast. We're coming to you with a new episode today on Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. Joined, as always, by co-host Eric Bowman.
Hey, how's it going, Dan?
Going well. And we're glad to be here bringing another episode to you. We got an interesting conversation and list of topics to talk about on this episode. Coming up later in the episode, we're going to be interviewing Intrepid CEO James Thornton. We're going to be talking a lot about what some of the controversy in the industry is right now based around refunds within the entire travel industry with tour operators, travel advisors, giving them to their clients, airlines, cruise lines. The whole topic of conversation could get quite controversial. So we're going to get James' thoughts on where Intrepid stands on that and where he believes the rest of the industry should be. We're also going to be providing a lot of different comments we've heard from listeners and readers of Travel Pulse out there as it relates to the refund controversy from some topics we've talked on the podcast in the past about. So we've got a lot coming up here, and we're going to get into a little bit of what's trending that Eric likes to start these episodes off with. So Eric, I'm giving it away to you.
Absolutely. So right now the big topics are there are glimmers of hope in the world of travel right now. So that was my Bowman's Travel Brief column this week. Kicked that off with glimmers of hope because we do have some positive news. You know, people are itching to get out. They're hungry for travel. Agents and advisors, though, need to fill that hunger with their expert knowledge. So learning is key. And in the coming weeks, you can actually learn more about several of the big players in the industry through the Travel Pulse webinars. Help be a part of the travel comeback. Hear from top executives and enter for a chance to actually win some prizes. Some of the upcoming webinars include Blue Diamond Resorts this week. And in June, we got Palladium, Crystal Cruises, Delta Vacations, Hotel Escaret Mexico, and Villas of Distinction, which that's going to be a great one. You don't want to miss because villas are going to be a hot commodity post-pandemic as families may not want to stay in a huge resort or hotel, and they're going to want to prefer their own space. So definitely want to make sure you check that out. You can find out more information at travelpulse.com/webinars. Sign up for the email reminders, and you'll receive information on which prizes you can win.
Great stuff, Eric. Yep, we got a lot happening on Travel Pulse with webinars. It's how a lot of different suppliers are reaching you, the travel advisor, and a lot of them are incentivized. So definitely check that out at travelpulse.com/webinars. Sign up and you can be reminded to join. They're only an hour long and chock full of great information. So what else is out there trending in the news lately, Eric? There's a lot of glimmers of hope happening around the industry. Where are you seeing that?
Indeed, places are announcing that they'll be opening up, or rather phased reopenings, which is a phrase that you're going to hear a lot now. And moving forward in the next coming weeks, that's phased reopenings is different plannings of different tiers of how they're going to be reopening up to tourism. So it'll be the new unprecedented times phrase that you'll hear over and over again, and you maybe get sick of, but it's good news. You know, things are going to be opening up. So we got Florida Keys scheduled to reopen June 1st. St. Lucia is planning to reopen to U.S. tourists beginning June 4th. Italy's reopening for tourism as far as Europeans go in early June, and then to the rest of the world in mid-June is their plan right now. And you have Bahamas, actually, really popular summer travel spot. They're aiming to open up July 1st. So Travel Pulse reached out to several tourism boards, and we published a gallery piece that you definitely want to check out if you haven't yet. It's tourism boards share what they're doing now and their future plans. A lot of great in-depth insight from various tourism boards, not just here in the U.S., but also around the world. Other good trending news and glimmers of hopes, Global Data reported a spike in travel and tourism deal activity last week, which is awesome. Just recently this week, Delta decided that they are going to be adding 100 more daily flights in June. And this is not only to U.S. domestic destinations, but also flights to Canada, Central, South, and Latin America, and the Caribbean. So we'll talk more about the airline industry later up on the show. A lot going on in the airlines, so you don't want to miss that. A new survey showed that some travelers are willing to travel right now, like this second in May, and I can't say I blame them. I would be right there with you. Some of those people surveyed actually said they would even go on a cruise right now. So there's some good news, cruise news coming up later on in the show with US-based cruise lines that we'll touch on then too. But speaking of just trending search terms that we hear a lot, Google search terms are showing us really good signs too. Dan, tell us a little bit more about that.
Exactly. And I think that's one thing that we as a publisher need to stay on top of when we go around writing different news pieces is knowing what people are out there looking for. What type of information are they seeking? And there's a lot of really good search terms. It's not on the negative side of things where people are searching bad type of things that would be negative for the travel industry. A lot of these are very good signs. A lot of search terms that are either consistently growing or really spiking as of late. A lot of search terms like, when is travel reopening? When are travel bans being lifted? Where can I travel? When is Cancun opening? When is Mexico opening? When is Italy opening? A lot of like, where is insert destination opening? And then how to travel during COVID-19. So it's a lot of people looking, and it seemed like they have that itch of they want to get out, they want to travel, and they want to know how to do it and where they can go. So a lot of good positive search trends to see on that side. Things are reopening up. So I think this is, we're at the very beginning of seeing these, like you said, phased reopenings, things slowly coming back. It doesn't seem like across the board are staying shut down, going the opposite direction, getting worse. It seems like we're now at the very beginning of the beginning, if you will. So definitely positive search signs there.
Which is just fantastic. We, as we've been saying several episodes, that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when travel will bounce back. So we know that's coming and we're on the cusp of that. So we're really looking forward to that. So
I think one of the other things to note out there for travel advisors as well, you can look up this data too. It's publicly available. If you go on Google and you can look at, search up search trends, and you can type in and you can see how much something is being searched. You can see the history of it, like whether it's been going up, down, staying flat. I think it'd be very valuable insight, especially for people that are in your area, or you can even tell clients about this type of stuff. Like people are really searching for this, searching for that, match that up with some pricing. You know, it doesn't have to be immediate. It could be right down the line. And just say, you know, it seems like this is getting good search traffic and trends, and, you know, it might be something you want to consider. So definitely some savvy digital SEO search trending type of work that you can put into your business there.
Absolutely. It can definitely help grow your business. So there's also some additional glimmers of hope in the cruise world, as I teased earlier. So U.S. cruise lines hope to start as early as June. So if you've got clients and you know that they're itching to get out and travel and they do love cruises, venture them on over to the U.S. cruise baseline. So River Cruise Lines, American Cruise Lines is looking to start back up June 20th, and American Queen Steamboat Company is aiming for a June 22nd start, which I love this. You know, the CDC no sail order is in effect until July 24th, but Charles B. Robertson, the president and CEO of American Cruise Lines, told Travel Pulse that that CDC order is not really targeted to lines with ships of their size. So it's specifically for vessels with, quote, 200 or 250 or more souls on board. That's passengers and crew in total, and that doesn't really apply to them. So would you go on a cruise in June if you could, Dan, if you could get away from work?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at these and saying that I think before we mentioned river cruising, since those boats aren't like the massive ocean liners that have thousands upon thousands of people, these are being under 250 all in, like passengers, crew, everything. I think this, especially being in the U.S., you can couple in some domestic trips that we've been talking about immensely on this podcast, which I've seen mentioned in articles throughout the industry, both on the consumer and trade side. Travel and Leisure was talking about it, and we talk about all the time as well. So I can definitely see, you know, I would do that as well. I'll talk about why I might be forced to fly instead of taking a road trip later in this episode. It seems like what I would want to do, especially with how gas prices are so cheap, especially for the summer, I think it's going to be the summer of the road trip, RV travel. We've talked about a lot too. Take a road trip to somewhere like over where American Cruise Lines may, you know, sail from along the Mississippi or something like that. I think it would be a great, you know, trip, especially if you can do social distancing and stay in your own car and see a lot of the country. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to.
Absolutely. So if you miss it, small ships are your best bet right now. So you can go and explore the United States. So some of them even have themed cruises, you know, from Civil War and Mark Twain to fall foliage, which is just absolutely beautiful, especially if we can have some sense of normalcy back in the fall, like many of us hope. That would be a great one to venture out as well. And also 50s and 60s throwbacks, which is just pretty cool. If you are going to get on those larger lines and that's what you're most anticipating for, you're going to have to wait a little later in the summer, fall, winter time, or into 2021. So when those larger lines do resume, though, we'll see some different things, as we've talked about on a number of podcasts. But most recently, what has really been trending the last 2 days is the news item that Royal Caribbean will be eliminating buffet dining when they start their cruises back up post-COVID-19 pandemic time. Where do you stand on that, Dan? Do you love, do you hate buffets?
Well, I've only been on one cruise before, which obviously there was a buffet. It wasn't massive or anything like that. On or off ships, I've been a fan of them. I can see how they might not be the places to go for the cleanest, the most assured cleanliness, I should say, because you don't know what people are doing when they go up there, as opposed to if it's only a certain number of staff around something like that. I can see how eliminating those temporarily, which they said they'll do, is a good thing. I've seen places, and I'm not the biggest fan of buffets. You know, I don't seek them out. I guess they're nice and convenient and all, but a lot of people treat those sneeze guards as suggestions. So, probably the best idea that they eliminate those for at least temporarily.
Yeah, it seemed like it was going to have to be a must just to get rid of those. I don't mind them. I do have been on a few cruises where I've gone, and that's what I did for my dinner option, is we did the buffet, hit the line, and then sat out on the top deck and watched the sunset, and it's beautiful. I have a glass of wine. I love that. But at the immediate return on this, yeah, it makes the most sense. You've got to get rid of those and just switch it over to kind of like a serve line or just a full wait staff situation where you have a server and you sit down, come get your order kind of thing. It might be more of the dining hall line. I used to work at a dining hall in college. Shout out to the University of Georgia and Snelling Dining Hall. That's where I used to work. We had this thing called the main line. I used to work at the pizza station a lot, but sometimes I would be scheduled on the main line and you have the plate, the server puts it on the plate and then hands them the food. That's how it works. So you might be seeing some of those on some different cruise ships moving forward as to kind of eliminate the buffet aspect, but still have that broad range of dining area of where they had that. They're just going to have to retool how they do things. And
Yeah, I can definitely see. And I think what coming out of this more so than anything is people are going to be concerned and asking about the cleanliness of stuff. So, the best way to do that is by eliminating certain things and transitioning and changing things up a little bit. It would definitely be for the better of everybody. And I don't think there's going to be too much blowback about that.
Speaking of cleanliness, over in the airline world, airlines have told crews that they can't force you to wear a face mask while you're on the plane. Airports have already been testing new screening test technology. Facilities that have started testing and implementing thermal cameras, sanitation booths, and other equipment to avoid the spread of the virus and protect airport screeners from being infected. You're also going to see TSA is working with the White House right now to kind of finalize plans too about which places are going to be pushing forward with that full go. So I think we're going to see that hopefully next week is what it will be finalized. It's just not finalized. At this moment. So maybe next week's episode, we'll be talking about that more in depth. So another cool thing I saw in the airline world was Vegas debuted PPE vending machines. Thought that was cool. Don't be surprised if you see those in more airports in the future, in case you want to get your mask, your cleaning hand sanitizers and everything, just hit that vending machine and you're good to go.
Those can definitely be helpful if you ran out of supplies on your trip or during your travels or simply forgot or did not pack them. I think that's one of the things that you might want to take away from this when traveling during coronavirus. If you're going to be sending clients or going yourself out on travels here coming soon, whether it's in June, July, August, you might want to know a few tips of how to stay safe when flying during coronavirus. These are all pretty self-explanatory that I've seen. I think a lot of it's common sense, but it's just a matter of reinforcing it that I think really gets the job done. Mainly a lot about doing your research, making sure the service, the routes and everything haven't changed of where you're flying to and out of. Definitely want to be up on that so you don't get left hung out to dry. That and what the policies are of the airline that you're doing, just so you're aware ahead of time of what their policies are. A lot of these cancellation, refund, rescheduling, all these different policies that are out there are pretty consumer friendly, but you want to know what it is specifically for the carrier that you're using. Also, what to pack. Obviously, like I just mentioned, extra supplies. Make sure you have all your documentation. I freak out when it comes to any of that. I make sure I have printed copies of everything of it on my phone. I don't trust my phone working at the exact time I need it to, so I make sure I have the proper paper documentation, all different things, and the supplies, obviously, of any cleaning supplies you can bring. TSA was being kind of lenient on what they were letting through for cleaning supplies, being over certain carrying sizes and everything, which is good. Also, they do recommend wear a face covering. I think it'll just save you a lot of trouble by wearing it. No airlines are saying they're not going to force people to, even though they're saying that you have to. Just do it from start to finish in the thing. I think you would save yourself a lot of trouble. Just about everybody is doing it, so just make sure that's being done. Also, disinfecting high-touch areas and your seat. Just avoid touching any high-touch areas to begin with, but if it's a matter of habit to just touch certain things or needing to, so disinfecting those areas and the entire seat would definitely be helpful. A lot of airlines are providing things to help you do that, so that's good to know as well. Obviously, coming out of all this, one of the last and final things we've heard from listeners out there is about travel insurance. Getting travel insurance, whether you're a traveler yourself or you're a travel advisor, I think having to the know-all about travel insurance is just absolutely crucial, especially now and going forward. Luckily, a very strong partner of ours, Allianz, they have a great program based around this. And at AllianzTravelInsurance.com, they have a complete rundown, easy to read, everything about all you need to know. I don't think there's any excuse not to know any of these things. They give you a very simple, easy to read COVID-19 FAQs as they relate to the travel insurance policies, how they work their way in there. Then they just show you and explain to you just how travel insurance works altogether, what it covers, what it doesn't cover. During these current times, what things have changed. Even for travel advisors out there, if you want to offer that, I don't see why any travel advisor should not be able to offer this to anybody. When you go and book a flight, especially on American, they are always trying to tell you, do you want travel insurance? Do you want travel insurance? Advisors should be doing the same thing, at least knowing exactly what you can and can't sell. There is a course on TravelAgentAcademy.com for Allianz. You can go there and it'll give you the complete rundown on offering travel insurance to your clients. So I don't think after all this, and like we said before, after all this is over, cleanliness and knowing that they're, ease of mind, peace of mind, that they are going to be safe and comfortable in situations when traveling as it relates to their health. So I think having that is a very good move and knowing how that works.
And before we get to the refund talk, which is a little bit further on the airlines here, there's been a bit of a controversy we've seen back and forth between messages we've received and stories we posted as well. Airlines saying that they'll rely on their partnerships with travel agencies and travel advisors for insights to aid recovery. But we also ran a column from a previous podcast guest of ours, Megan Chapa, actually, entitled Dear Airlines, You Need Travel Agents, which was an opinionated column about how many agents actually feel right now. So there's a bit of the debate back and forth on whether or not airlines really are going forward with a lot of their partnerships on agencies, or they're working with agents in a great deal. But if you are in the airline industry CEOs, if you're listening, if your partners are listening, we'd love to have you on the podcast. Come let agents hear directly from you. Join us on the podcast. You can reach out to us at podcast@travelpulse.com is the best way to contact us. Any listeners out there in general, also hit us up. We love your feedback. We love talking with you and sharing your information and getting you quoted here on the show as well. So Dan, I know we had some listener comments that we wanted to get to as well.
Yep, we're going to get to those. And I would say definitely reach out to us about that airlines thing. We've seen and heard some very strongly worded emails about how they believe some airlines are just kind of blowing smoke. They feel like they're just sending them free business and always have been. And it seems like, there could be some repairs to that relationship in need, definitely. So let us know your thoughts on that. We did talk about some fam trips in a previous episode. I believe that was last week on our special Monday episode. Before we had talked to domestic travel, we were talking about fam trips. We had some responses to this. I was mainly saying that fam trips, there was discussion over whether people should be looking into doing them right now. I was saying that maybe it would be best not to focus on going on your next fam, but selling what you know during these times. So I'll just paraphrase a couple of responses we got here. One response from Cal Cheney from Bucket List Travel and Tours, he said that he would assume there are many advisors like him that have canceled trips this year. He had money to invest in fams, was supposed to be going to Machu Picchu and the Galapagos in April. He just postponed a tour of 40 clients. It's all about education for him, and fams would be even better. He even said fams don't need to be free. It should be a win-win situation with vendors. So, it just really seems like that, some people want to get out there and do fams, which is totally fine. He did mention that he agreed somewhat with some of our comments that we should not worry about fams right now. he does feel that there is another reason that fuels this yearning that we might not understand. He said, for those being over 60 or have serious bouts with health issues like cancer, we're fearful that this year and the loss of travel opportunities like FAMS will be a permanent loss. How many years will we have left to travel like this? Did we lose 10 or 20% of those opportunities? He makes a valuable point, and I've noticed that with a lot of people. I couldn't imagine being older during this. You're wondering, you know, how much of your, you know, time and chances that you have to do certain things are being cut down because of this. So I totally understand that as well. We did receive another email as well from Carla. Hey, Carla Haygarth of Travel Only, saying that she has a fam cruise booked for November in the Caribbean, and she's never been on a cruise before and really excited and hopes that it can still happen. She's trying to grow her business once everything opens up, so she doesn't want to miss this fam trip. There's so much to learn and provide my business with opportunity, and I think it'll also help us understand the new way of travel, and they can explain to their clients once we have had the experience. Now, that is a very interesting point to make. That is something that I did not see myself, and this is why we open up to discussion and conversation like this, because I did not see that side of it as well. But being able to have that experience and come back to your clients and say, hey, I just went on this in this new travel normal, and here's how it was. So that's an interesting take as well. So thank you for both your emails, Cal and Carla. Our podcast isn't the only place that we receive emails. Our editorial department, which Eric oversees, receives a lot of emails and a lot of feedback from people as well. And this is going to lead us right into our refund discussion. So what are some of the things you've been hearing from readers and listeners over on that end, Eric?
Yeah, Dan. So we've been getting some interesting comments and quotes and forwarded of emails of different companies and their interactions with their clients and everything. So to that, and I'm not going to read things verbatim on here. I'm not going to call out, you know, specific company names on this, but I just wanted to say that, you know, it's communication is really important. Communication is key, especially the ones your communication you're having with your customers as well as your travel agents. You know, you can't go around saying things like it is impossible to refund you. I think you just have to be careful about your phrasing of different words.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I, from a marketing perspective of my side, I wouldn't have put together a blanket email to all people that had excursions booked saying that it is impossible to provide a refund for canceled excursions at this time. I think that's a little crazy. Now, that this tour operator did offer a extra incentive for rebooking travel, which not every place is doing, which I can touch on in my own personal experience in a little bit as well. But they added an additional 20% on top of that, which is good. Not every place is doing that. Some have been doing 10, 15, 25% on top of their, you know, original booking. But I think saying it's impossible to provide a refund, and I think that's where this particular reader was a little upset. They were looking for a small refund, and they just didn't understand why they wouldn't be able to provide a refund for something that was not given to them as a service. It was not provided, so therefore they should be entitled to their money back. Obviously, this will go down a whole different rabbit hole of every single company's own policies, whether or not those policies have been updated in the wake of COVID-19, exactly what those are. And I think that's why it's important to read a lot of those things that you kind of agree to without reading. Obviously, this is going to bring that to light more so than not in recent times. But yeah, it'll be interesting, and we're going to bring that up in our conversation here with James shortly, because there is a lot of companies that have different policies, different things going on. We're going to run through a few different examples, but I think, you know, hopefully that some people, if they seriously need that money back, that they're able to get it. The problem is on the other side, whether it's a tour operator, airline, cruise line, they don't just have your money that you paid them sitting in a bank account that they can just Venmo back to you. They disperse that immediately to the partners and the people they work with. So they don't have the money just sitting on hand. So I can understand how it's not easy for them to just refund you the money that you paid them. However, you know, would it be the good thing to do and hopefully something that they can do? Sure. But, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about this with Intrepid CEO James Thornton coming up shortly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some people can afford to have that voucher and have that credit for future stuff. I'm one of those people. That was what I dealt with Delta back in my March trip that got canceled and my flight and everything. I immediately took the credit. It wasn't a huge deal to me. Other people really need that money right now. So I think you have to just be careful in your language, in your communication of how you put that forward. And as you know, Dan, you said, and I totally agree with, you can't just have a blanket, you know, statement that you put out there, is because it's really not going to help you down the line in the future once we get all past this. People are going to remember.
Yep. They are. And down the line, you know, that might come back to haunt you. And I was set, just like you were mentioning in your experience with Delta. I actually just had an update on my experience with American Airlines myself. I know I had mentioned on here when I came back from the honeymoon that I was going to be refunded for a change fee that was supposedly waived. This was back on March 21st, where I had to cut the honeymoon short 2 days. I changed, no matter what I was doing online from my resort in Antigua, it was charging me a change fee. I figured, let me get back. I'll deal with it and I'll, you know, process a refund. They say they're waiving them, so I'm definitely going to get it back. Called them as soon as I land on March 21st, and they said, yep, we'll get that processing. We'll receive it back on your card in 5 days. No problem at all. Fast forward 2 months to this week, I still have not received that back on my card. I get a call from American Airlines saying they just changed their policy and they are no longer providing those sorts of refunds. They are only giving future vouchers, vouchers for future travel. So they're going to just match just the $400 in change fees that they're going to give to me in a digital certificate to use for future travel. So that's where I was mentioning earlier. It seems like as much as I would want a road trip somewhere, I'm going to have $400 worth of American Airlines vouchers to use within a year. So it looks like I'm going to at least be getting on one flight somewhere. And I'll see how that experience goes. But I just thought it was interesting that American Airlines, I don't know if this is spelling trouble for them, if they updated their policy somewhere, if this is just change fees or if this is for people's tickets as well. Definitely keep an eye out for that, because this was in process nearly 2 months ago, and they now all of a sudden changed it, and they wouldn't even go above the 100% credit back. They were just doing just a straight up exactly what it was worth, and that was the best as I could do with them after a 15 or 20 minute conversation. So from one of the biggest airlines, could it be spelling trouble for American? I don't know, but could that happen to you or clients? Definitely be on the lookout for it.
Refunds are a big topic right now, as we've heard from many of you listening on the show. You want to hear from someone with firsthand experience, and that's what we've got coming up for you on today's interview segment.
So a lot of the conversations we've been having both on the podcast and outside of here have been based around refunds in the travel industry. I'm so glad that we have our guest on here today. He's recently written an open letter to the travel industry regarding this conversation. It's the CEO of Intrepid. We welcome James Thornton to the conversation. James, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, guys. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And thank you for joining us where you are a number of hours ahead of us on this beautiful Tuesday here, I believe Wednesday there. So thank you for flexibility.
Yeah, 8 a.m. Wednesday morning here in Melbourne. So and we're heading into winter. So a bit dark and bleak, unfortunately.
I think we were talking last week about how we're going completely international with this podcast. And, last week we were, or a couple weeks ago, we were in Europe. Now we're Australia. We're both based out of America. So this is going great for us. So we're glad to have you. Yeah, great to have you. And would you be able to just give a little bit of a background on yourself and how long you've been in the industry with Intrepid and a little bit of info like that? That'd be great.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, absolutely. So, James Thornton's my name. I'm the CEO of Intrepid Travel. I have been, this is my first job in the travel industry. So my background before Intrepid was private client asset management. So I essentially, my job was to make rich people richer. And about 15 years ago, I decided that that wasn't the way I wanted to spend my life and spend my career. So I took a bit of a career change and joined a small adventure travel company called Intrepid as a sales and marketing coordinator in our very small UK office. I think we employed about 5 people in the office at the time. It was 2005, and over the course of the last 15 years, I've grown my way through the Intrepid business. I was the first non-founding managing director of Intrepid Travel in 2012. Been managing director of the Intrepid Travel Group since 2013, and in 2017 I became the group CEO. So really lucky to lead a fantastic global company like Intrepid, one that really puts purpose at the forefront of what it does. We've been a certified B Corp over the last 2 years, and it's been a fantastic journey, certainly up until the last couple of months when obviously the world's been turned on its head.
Right. Yeah. The world has been turned upside down its head indeed. So we're talking refunds here. And as Dan mentioned, you recently wrote an open letter regarding the refund conversation taking place in the travel industry right now. So to those who have not yet read it or are not familiar with what's happening with refunds in the industry, would you be able to speak to the conversation that's going on and what your letter addressed, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So the letter's context was really to kind of set the scene around what Intrepid has experienced over the course of the last 2 months and the way in which we've tried to react and respond. And I suppose it was written very much from Intrepid Travel's perspective, but also from the perspective of, I'm sure, many other CEOs of travel companies, be them tour operators or travel retailers around the world, as we've tried to balance these completely unprecedented times. So just by way of context, Intrepid suspended our global operations for the first time in our 31-year history on March 14 as a result of coronavirus. And we've recently extended that trip suspension through until the end of September. So our number one priority when we made that decision to suspend trips with borders closing around the world was to get over 3,000 of our travelers who were in over 100 different countries around the world, we had to get them repatriated home safely. So that was our number one priority. Number two priority then was a company that had had then to cancel 55,000 bookings for that period through until September, was to kind of work through the ground operation implications of that. Third priority then was, as a company, having no revenue come into our business, or very, very limited revenue come into our business, was then to reduce our overall cost base. And then the fourth response was then working through what our refund policy was going to be and working out how we could encourage customers to try and take travel credit over a refund wherever they possibly could. So what we did was we went out and asked our customers to take 110% travel credit for a credit voucher that could be used anytime in the next 2 years. And we were offering, we were asking our customers to do that to help Intrepid make a down payment on the kind of world that people want to see in a post-COVID environment and allow us to continue to employ countless number of people around the world and enable us to offer the best service and trips imaginable when we're able to get traveling again. So that was our priority. We then got feedback from customers that we weren't responding quickly enough to their concerns around those customers who just didn't want to accept a travel credit, and we recognised that everyone's situations were very different. So of about the 55,000 passengers we've had to suspend trips on, around about 2,000 passengers were not willing to take the travel credit. And they were openly contacting us and saying that we weren't responding quickly enough to their desire just to receive a refund. So I really penned a letter, an open letter, to explain why we were pushing the travel credits, but highlighting that, you know, if people really, really did want to travel, really did want a refund, then we would implement those refunds for those people. So that's what we really tried to do, and really just try and explain to people how challenging it's been for travel companies and for tour operators. And, you know, we've really had to make countless impossible decisions on the fly over the last couple of months, decisions that have changed people's lives, decisions that have changed businesses. And so it's been an incredibly challenging time. And that's why I penned the open letter, to try and be as transparent as possible as to the actions that we were taking.
Great. And that's an excellent way to do it. I know it was well received by the industry. I think anytime someone can come out and just, you know, honestly and openly explain why things are done and how things are done and the thought behind it, especially even coming on like now, a medium like this on podcasting. I mean, it's really changing how people are taking in information like this, which is great. And it's something that Eric and I have been talking about a little bit. I think you answered one of my next questions here. Basically, the stance on refunds and if your policy has changed. Obviously, you've implemented one way, and you said out of 55,000, there was about 2,000 that didn't want the credit, and you're working with them to get them refunds. Would you encourage other tour operators in the industry or any travel companies in general to do the same?
I think the key thing is that you know, every travel company right now needs to try and maintain as much cash as they possibly can in their company. You know, while I suppose in the last week or two we're starting to see some very small positive signs around travel restrictions being released, the brutal reality is that true unrestricted international travel is, in my mind, at least 6 months away. You know, I think it'll be unlikely that we'll see true unrestricted travel until into 2021. And you know, and maybe not even until there's widespread use of a vaccine, whether or not a vaccine will be created or not. So companies need to maintain as much cash as they can. Offering travel credits is a widespread way of being able to retain that cash, be able to continue to keep some size of operation while obviously downsizing where possible. But you know, ultimately, as travel companies, we have to abide by the terms and conditions that we have set within our booking conditions, and that's the key thing. So you know, travel companies just have to abide by their terms and conditions during these unprecedented times, and make decisions accordingly.
So two-part question here. What would you recommend travel advisors do if a tour operator or travel company will not provide a refund? And also, how do you think those companies should communicate to advisors and the consumers about refunds?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard for me to comment on what other companies should do outside of what Intrepid's doing. I mean, all I can say is from an Intrepid perspective that we're incredibly appreciative of our agents and advisors. And it's been such an uncertain and unprecedented time for everyone. And we're all feeling the effects of the pandemic just as hard as all of the tour operators out there. Our agency partners have shown strong support for our terms and conditions during this time. And same as our customers who've booked directly with us, and you know, we're offering those 110% credits, and they can be booked through a travel advisor. The credit sits on the agent or agency file in our system. If the client would like to request a refund, then the agent can send an official request through on their behalf to your experience at intrepidtravel.com, which we can fulfill minus some recoverable costs. And you know, we are continuing to have constant communication with our agency partners to ensure as much transparency as we can, and give them as many updates as we can, and availability to answer any or all of their questions. So I suppose the guidance for any travel agency partner is just to continue to communicate openly as best they can with their tour operator partners.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the transparency and the communication is really key. And I think that's why a lot of people love using travel advisors. So it's good to maintain that relationship between both the suppliers and the advisors themselves, which is great to see. We have been getting from other tour operators out there. Obviously, there's some tour operators that are very small. And they have been asking and fighting. They see a lot of the things that have been going on with in the U.S., the CARES Act and the stimulus that agencies and other travel businesses have been getting in the country recently. They feel like they've been left out, you know, hung to dry a little bit, if you will, as the little guys in the industry, and as smaller independent groups like that, smaller tour companies are struggling. Would you have any advice for smaller companies, like things that you have done that might be able to help some others within the industry? Tour operators or even agencies?
Yeah, the number one thing, and I think Intrepid feels it too. I mean, Intrepid might be perceived to be a much bigger, you know, international tour operator, and clearly we are, but you know, we're not a big airline, and it's typically the big airlines or the big hotel chains that tend to often hog some of the mainstream travel media, don't they? And so even a company of Intrepid size and scale can get left out too. So one of the key focuses we've done is just try and work with all of the different government or local authorities wherever we can. So for any small travel company who's feeling a little hung out to dry, I'd just really encourage them to speak to their local, you know, member of parliament. I'm not sure the term representatives that they have.
Yeah.
And I'd be trying, you know, travel representatives. I'd be trying their local member of parliament, their local governor. I'd be trying to speak to as many, you know, governing bodies as there are within the travel industry to try and get them to continue to articulate the case for travel companies. Because the brutal reality of this, unfortunately, for travel, is that we are one of the first companies to be affected, and we will be one of the last industries to come out of this pandemic. As I said, until there is true unrestricted travel, which I think is a long way off, we really aren't going to get back on our feet. So we're going to require as much government support as we can. Otherwise, we're going to see these fantastic companies, be them big or small, potentially be at financial risk. And if they're at financial risk, then that will reduce competition. It will reduce the offering that clients have, so that when borders do reopen, travel is potentially going to become a more expensive item. And the last thing we want to see is travel go back to the way it was, you know, 30 years ago, where it was really the predominant theme of you know, people with higher income. And you know, if there's one thing that's been great of the way travelers has grown over the course of the last 10 or 15 years in particular, has become more accessible to wider groups of people. And that's really important going forward. So we've got to make sure that the governments and authorities support the travel industry as much as they can, in the same way that, you know, you're seeing restaurant workers kind of pull together and campaign to get support. We really need that for travel workers too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Coming together, showing your support. And it goes back to what we've been saying earlier, is communication is key. So just getting out there and getting your voice heard. So
I think so. Looking- I think transparency is key too. You know, I think one of the other things that's going to become really clear in a post-pandemic world is those companies and those travel entities that built trust with their customers, with their travel advisors, with their travel agent partners. You know, you've got to be transparent during these times. And sometimes it's okay as a travel company to say either we don't know, or we're sorry, or we're working this through, because no one had a script for this when it hit 3 months ago. No one had a script. And, you know, unfortunately, the most overused word right now is unprecedented, but it's just the reality. It's so unprecedented for so many of us, and so many of us having to work things through incredibly complex, difficult decisions on the fly, that we need to try and have a bit of understanding. We need to recognize everyone's in different positions, but really try and be as transparent and as open as we can, and really try and explain why we're doing what we're doing, because the reality is we're all trying to navigate this time as best we can.
Absolutely. So just looking to the future of travel, which is, you know, a ways off, as you've been saying, what do you think travel advisors, travelers, and travel companies can do to help rebuild and rebound to get, you know, the bounce back started and going?
So I think, look, the travel industry can rebound stronger if it chooses to rebuild more responsibly. And I feel it's a real pivotal moment for the travel industry and potentially the world, in that, you know, that climate was being talked about so negatively in a pre-COVID world, that we really get the chance to rebuild afresh. And so, you know, the crisis has brought our sector and the global economy to a crashing halt, and it'd be remiss if it weren't for some good. And so I don't think we should necessarily be aspiring for things to go back to normal, but rather trying to redefine what normal means, and use this time as a rare chance to think about how we travel and about how we can aim to be more ethical and sustainable travelers and global citizens in the future. You know, at Intrepid, as the world's largest adventure travel company and a pioneer in sustainable travel for over 30 years, we're really using this time to think about how we can rebuild ourselves to be better, and using tools and insights we've built over the years in our purpose work to encourage others in our industry to use this shutdown as a time to really challenge themselves to try and emerge from the crisis more responsibly and ethically. So some examples of that in the weeks and months ahead, we'll be launching a series of initiatives and partnerships to support a responsible rebuild. And these initiatives will center on key areas that Intrepid has identified as critical to responding responsibly. So two of them are advocating for net zero emissions by 2030 and ending exploitative wildlife tourism. And really the goal of these initiatives, which are being developed with other key partners and organizations in the tourism and responsible business world, will be to provide a lower barrier and an easier way for other travel companies to adopt more sustainable and ethical practices into the future.
Sounds like a very productive time that you guys are having during the quarantines and everything, which is something we've been promoting to everybody to do, is to make good use of your time. And it definitely sounds like Intrepid is doing that with these different initiatives you're going to be rolling out for rebounds and rebuilding, which is great to hear.
Absolutely.
And while we're on the topic of Intrepid as well, what are you seeing from some of the customers, either inquiries or things that you're, you know, seeing coming down the future here, down the pike, as far as destinations that people are showing interest in or booking, the types of travel, and maybe even the, you know, demographics or types of people that are trying to travel?
For sure. Yeah. So I guess top destinations currently for rebooking, So passengers rebooking using those credits, we're seeing Peru, we're seeing the Galapagos, Greece, and Japan. They're the four top destinations at the moment. In terms of top destinations for new bookings, again, we're seeing the Galapagos and Peru, But we're seeing new bookings also coming in now for Egypt and Morocco too. So I think it's potentially those countries that have either dealt well or better with the pandemic, or countries that promote potentially more active or wildlife type experiences or off the beaten track. I think travelers are going to look for more remote places with natural surroundings while also wanting to continue to check off bucket list experiences. A few other trends that we're seeing a surge in interest among North American travelers in active trips, which may indicate that the travelers are ready to get moving after months of being stuck at home in quarantine. I don't know about you, but I'm certainly keen to get out and, you know, be active and, you know, jump on a bike and do some walking. And I think we'll see our travelers wanting to look for more active trips. We're predicting, though, that the first initial types of travel will be hyperlocal travel. So the rebound will be first as countries slowly reopen, and people probably choose to explore their own backyard. So I think we'll see that domestic travel will emerge after hyperlocal travel, that people will travel domestically within their countries. And I don't know about you, but, you know, we've almost been spoiled, haven't we, that we can hop on a plane anywhere of the last, you know, 10 years. And so you go and visit all these wonderful international destinations, but you often forget about the own country that you live in and all of these remarkable places that you have. So I think it'll be hyperlocal, then domestic, and then over the course of time, international travel to select destinations, depending on where borders reopen. So, you know, down here in Australia, we're already talking about a trans-Tasman bubble with New Zealand. So I think that'll be the first place we'll reopen to. Maybe to Vietnam, a country that's managed the pandemic incredibly well. You'll see European countries start to welcome travellers from other European countries. So I think that's one of the other trends. One of the last trends I wanted to highlight with you is we're also seeing a longer booking window emerging. And if you look at a company like Intrepid, typically our booking window is about 2 to 4 months from departure. So, you know, if you're booking here in May, often typically that would be people then traveling kind of July, August and September. Clearly that's not possible. We're seeing that the March 2021 is a popular time for new bookings. And May 2021 is the most popular time for rebookings. So we're really seeing that kind of spring 2021 as being a time that people are really starting to focus their booking attention around.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of people planning out for 2021, as you said. So we've really enjoyed having you on. Is there anything additional you want to make a comment or statements about refunds and the debates, the controversies around
that or where people can reach you or come to Intrepid to get any other information?
Absolutely. So, you know, the key thing with anyone at Intrepid is to reach out to us directly. We've got our teams in North America and our teams in the UK and Australia and New Zealand ready to support our customers and our travel agent partners to help them provide advice or guidance in any way possible that we can over this time. And just also to really add that that travel companies that can offer sustainable options and get off the beaten path will, I really think, become popular as we hopefully can progressively see travel rebound over the course of the months ahead.
Excellent. Thank you again for all the advice, insight, and the look at trends that what you're seeing. We really appreciate that, and so do the advisors listening. So thank you again for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, Faith.
Thanks again to James for coming on to the show today. If you want to be on the show or have topics or any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. podcast@travelpulse.com is the best way to reach us. And if you've been listening this far, we really thank you. We'd love to hear a review from you. So wherever you're listening to today's show, leave us a review. We would really love to get your feedback on that. So as we close out today's show, I just want to have a little bit of fun here at the end. And I got to mention Dan, you posted on Instagram this a few days ago, I guess it was. And you were ironing a banana suit. So I want to know about that, but I need to let our listeners know, first off, if you imagine anyone standing in a banana suit, it'd be, I guess, weird or funny, depending on your opinion on people wearing costumes randomly, especially during a global pandemic. But picture that with a guy who's got a crazy red Rona beard right now, because Dan is quarantined and locked down up in South Jersey there. So he's been growing out his beard. I guess we did a video record setup thing, a video meeting, and I was shocked to see Dan's face it covered in a Rona beard. He's been growing it out. I don't know why. I think they recommended that you shave those beards because it's just a germ trap. This is me speaking with a cleanly shaven face right now. Yes, I did shave this morning. But I need to know, man, what was the banana suit for? And are you going to shave anytime soon?
You know, it's funny. I've had this banana suit hanging in my closet along with a numerous amount of other costumes, suits, Halloween masks. I've collected them over the years, used them for a number of different projects. This banana suit was used to create a video in high school where one of my friends dressed in the banana suit and another friend dressed in a gorilla suit. And we filmed him chasing the banana through supermarkets, through our downtown area. He jumped on one car on a train and then ran up to the front of it and then jumped off the other door of it. And this is while it was stopping at the station. So, and I had the camera and I was running by them and it seemed like this train was going to take off with them on it as they just was running through in these costumes. Luckily they got off the train, but either way, that's why I had it. And I had it out here. One of me and my wife's friends, came by and she's a photographer and was doing, what they call portraits. So like portraits, she's taking social distancing photos from the car outside in the, on the sidewalk of us sitting front of the house. So you decided
I'm gonna wear my banana suit. This is
absolutely perfect. Perfect time to put it on. You know, the neighbors surrounding us that we, you know, have never talked to in the 2 years we've lived here, we're probably wondering what in the hell was going on. But they turned out to be really nice photos, really great photos, and just wearing a banana suit sitting on the front porch of, you know, the house, and it was a beautiful day out. So I ironed it and got it looking spiffy. So, you know, it's been a while since I broke it out. So, and as far as the beard,
I cannot wait to see those pictures.
I got them. I'll post them if anyone wants to see them.
All right, yeah. Good, yes.
And as far as the beard goes, I'm just like, while I'm in here and I don't need to show my face out in public or have anything important to go do, I'm just going to see what the beard looks like growing it out and just not touching it. I literally have not touched anything up, have not done anything to it. It looks a little insane. This is probably the longest it's ever been, to be honest. It's not as long as other people that I have seen and that we work with as well, but it's getting there. It's a little crazy. Usually I just keep it well trimmed and everything, but now it's definitely not. So I'm going to need some serious like hedge clippers when I want to trim this down to be much shorter. But I've had a beard probably since late college years. So probably going on, 7-8 years now I've had a beard at all times. So it's getting a little wild to upkeep with it. But, you know, what else to do? It's something entertaining, I guess.
Yeah, shout out to your wife for being totally cool with that in a photo shoot of a banana suit. Pretty random, so.
Yeah, very tolerable.
If you want to see that, follow Dan on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @EricBowman_. Dan, where can they reach you?
I'm Dan D_Callahan_. The name Dan Callahan's taken across the board. It's pretty wild, so I have to incorporate underscores as well. So D_Callahan_. I'll leave it up to you to figure out how to spell Callahan.
There you go. That's all the time we have for this week's show. Thank you for listening. If you made it this far, we love you. Stay safe and have a great week.